Coming Out, Episode 1. My story. I've got to be honest, there are really a handful of people that I have related this story to. Not only because I feel that it's something that's very personal, but more importantly, it's also somewhat painful. But looking back, I certainly wish that if someone had related a story similar to mine, my younger self would have really appreciated it. Because it's true what everyone says. You know, you feel like you're alone. You feel like you are the only person that is going through this. It's a struggle. Each coming out story is different. I liken it to an Agatha Christie novel, each with her own cast of characters, with both secretive and public opinions, motives, missteps, faults, and yes, passions. You never know who the murderer is in an Agatha Christie novel until the very end. Just like no one really knows or understands the journey and emotional turmoil an LGBTQ plus individual goes through before making their decision to come out. At least until they tell you, like I'm doing today. Some may not be surprised, some may be shocked, that the number one reason that keeps myself and members of my community from not publicly announcing and embracing who they are is the fear of rejection by loved ones, friends, coworkers, along with the fear of losing one's means of income, or worse, one's home. My name is Vasilios, and this is my coming out story. First, let me start with my name, Vasilios Constantine Berlidis. As an adult, I get a ridiculous amount of compliments about it, usually along the lines of, it's so pretty, wow, it's so regal sounding, which is interesting because it actually means of royal blood. It's lovely how it just rolls off the tongue, and my favorite, Greek, right? Or Russian or Italian? Well, it's Greek. And as per tradition, my first name represents the name of a saint, Saint Vasilios, also known as Saint Basil. My middle name was my father's name, Constantine. Hence, you get a name that stands out, makes the first day of any school year a living hell, ripe with mispronunciations. You try and live down Vaseline Birdless. It was a name that was like a lighthouse guiding any bullies looking for safe harbor, i.e. a victim to have fun with. Write to me. If my name wasn't enough for them, one could easily look to my overall appearance. An overweight kid with a horrible acne problem who wore generic clothing brands purchased at the local Zares store. For those who don't know, Zares, if Walmart and Birdines had a baby, it would have been named Zares. Why buy Levi's when you can buy wrestler jeans for 1/4 the price? Oh, and one other fact that I think I should mention. Although my nickname was Bill or Billy, don't get me started on how the Greeks associated Vasilios with that nickname. Starting in third grade, the name some of my more aggressive fellow students called me was Faggot. Yes, you heard right, Faggot. I was Faggot in the halls, Faggot in gym class, and definitely Faggot in the locker room. I was Faggot in the cafeteria, except not during pizza day, which I always found interesting. I was also Faggot on the school bus, and definitely Faggot at the bus stop. And I know this is going to be hard to believe. I was even Faggot in drama class. Along with the verbal abuse, there was also some physical abuse that I somehow managed, through the grace of God, to keep those occurrences much lower than the verbal abuse. This nickname, Faggot, followed me all throughout my school years, but eventually ended in the 11th grade. More on that later. It goes without saying that my self-esteem was low, actually worse than low. And looking back, I can definitely conclude that I suffered from depression because of it, a condition that I still suffer from today. But thanks to a good therapist and the right medication, it's under control. I want to point something out. I never felt suicidal. One thing that I can be grateful for. But I believe it was the close, small group of friends I had. Amber, one of my best friends during high school. Robin, who just happened to be Amber's mother. Corey and Rich, that helped me escape high school without a single suicide attempt. I don't say this to be flippant. The suicide rates of LGBTQ plus youths is staggering. And these youths are 5 times as likely to attempt suicide when compared to their heterosexual counterparts. I will be forever grateful to that wonderful group of friends. They may not realize it, but their impact on my younger self and who I am today was great. Even when we were playing Dungeons and Dragons, Amber, you were always there for me. Thanks. The other thing that helped me was the ballet. Yes, as if the stereotype gods had smiled upon this awkward teenager, I was a ballet dancer. Now, how I became a ballet dancer? Well, at the time, I was a musical theater major at the Performing and Visual Arts Center, PAVAC, which would later become Miami's New World School of the Arts. Think Fame, Miami style. There was a casting call for extras for American Ballet Theater's Romeo and Juliet. This would have been during Mikhail Brushnikov's time of serving as the artistic director for the famed ballet company. And interacting with the dancers, seeing the beauty, the dedication, the discipline, I was hooked. It was amazing. And the one thing that played in my favor, because there was no way my parents had the money to send me to ballet classes, was that boys at the premier studio in the United States received a free ride. Boys were a hot commodity. And if you were like me, 6 feet tall, well, winner, winner, chicken dinner. Sure, we had to sometimes paint the studio or wash and wax the ballet teacher's car every now and then, but that was a steal. 3 months into my training, I not only dropped 30 pounds, which actually put me at 150 pounds at 6 feet tall, just pure muscle, but my acne cleared up, and I had begun the journey of discovering who I was and actually found my confidence and my voice. Although, I'm pretty sure finally being able to fit into size 30 jeans helped me out a lot. This is where I fast forward to my actual coming out moment, which actually took place in 2 locations, in the car with my mom, and at school with a group of football players who enjoyed calling me by that pet name I mentioned earlier. So the car conversation. This is how that went. Each day, except for the weekends, would end the same way for me. After I had put in a full day of school, my mother or father would drive me to Martha Maher School of Ballet for ballet classes and rehearsals with the Miami Ballet. For those who don't recognize Miss Maher's name, she was one of the top 10 ballet instructors of her time and a founder of the dance community in Miami, Florida. What a blessing it was to be one of her students. It was during a Saturday drive back from a rehearsal for Miami Ballet's annual production of The Nutcracker, my mother decided to confront me about how distant we had grown apart. It went like this. Mom, okay, Billy, what's wrong? You've been moody and you don't talk to me anymore. Me. Nothing is wrong. Casting came out on Nutcracker and I'm pissed. Nobody gets stuck with King Rat 2 years in a row. for anyone that is not familiar with the role of King Rat, that's like the bottom of the barrel. It happens in the first act. You get one scene, you're dead, and you're out. Mom, that's not it. You've been like this for months. Me. Nothing is wrong, Mom. Let's just drop it. Mom, I'm not going to just drop it. We used to talk all the time. Now you barely say two words to me. Me. I don't know what to tell you. It's not about us. Big mistake on my part. Mom, so there is something wrong. Billy, just tell me. Me. Mom, let it go. Mom, tell me. You can tell me anything. Me, tell you anything. Anything at all. Mom, yes, anything. I love you. Just spit it out. Me, how about this? I'm gay. Are you happy now? There you go on a silver platter. Your son is gay. Dead silence. I had no intention of telling her, and it just slipped out. No warning, there it was. I would have said more, but my heart was in my throat, and it was pounding. And I did the only thing that I could do, and began to cry. You have to understand, there is all this confusion, frustration, the internal fighting with oneself about what was natural to me, and then what society, my parents, the Greek Orthodox Church expected of me. It all came crashing down on top of my head. I cried because I felt shame for who I was. I cried because no matter what I had done leading up to this point, putting it into words and saying it out loud meant it was true. No going back. Even if I was wrong in understanding my own sexuality, and let me tell you something, I wasn't wrong. Saying I was gay would always be there. The gay page was dog-eared in my mom's mind. And once you do that to a page, even if you try to smooth it out or even take an iron to it, the crease won't disappear. I was gay. I was 16. I was gay, coming out in the late 1980s, as the world was rocked by the AIDS pandemic. Back in the car, still nothing. And then it hit me that she would tell my dad. And that's when the gravity of the situation hit even harder. My father is what some would consider old world Greek. He came off the boat when he was 14. I'm not saying he was cruel, but there was this ingrained distaste for anything that could be construed as different or unmanly when compared to how he was raised and, of course, what the Greek Orthodox Church's opinion was on homosexuality. Well, it was enough to make me wish I could take back the words, I'm gay. Me, Mom, I'm still trying to figure this out. Please don't tell Dad. Mom, I won't tell your father. Now, right there was a big mistake I made. One, I should have made her promise, which I didn't. Two, I should have stated, please don't tell anyone. The next day, she called my grandmother, her mother, who I refer to as Nanny, Rose Drago, a spitfire, no-nonsense Italian woman from Queens, who hadn't met a cigarette she didn't like and had this humorous take on life that was infectious. She could command a room and have everyone laughing to the point of passing out. Nobody could resist her. She was brilliant. She always used to say, either laugh or you cry. Which one? Which one would you prefer? This is how that conversation went. Ring, 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 Nanny.
Hello?
My mom. Mom, it's me. Nanny.
Oh, Jerry, what's wrong?
My mom. It's Billy, Mom. He... Nanny.
What's wrong with Billy?
My mom. He said... Nanny.
Oh, for the love of God, Jerry. Billy's gay.
My mom. You new? Nanny.
Oh, Jerry, does a brick wall have to fall from the sky and hit you in the head? I've known Billy was queer since he was 8. And that was before the ballet and the musical theater.
My mom. Oh, Mom, what am I going to do? Nanny.
What are you going to do? Jesus, Joseph and Mary, give me strength. How about I tell you what you're not going to do? You will not treat that boy any different. And you will not love him any less.
What are you going to do?
This boy is the same boy who has sat by your hospital bedside while you dealt with kidney disease, dialysis, and your kidney transplant. He is the same boy who made you laugh every time you wanted to cry and give up. I've lost count of how many times you have told me what a blessing Billy has been. And let me tell you what I'm going to do if you treat or love that same boy even a smidge less than you did before. I will come down to Florida and kick your ass so badly that you'll wish Daddy were still alive to pull me off of you.
Wow. Oh, God. When my aunt and grandmother told me that story, I had no words. I don't know if it was because I have never seen anyone talk to my mother that way. Or whether... Still, I'm at a loss for words. Even today, talking about that conversation still makes me pause and smile. It was Nanny to the rescue, and without any hesitation, she instantly found a way to put it into terms that would hit home for my mother. She really did know her daughter. And here's the thing. From that conversation on, my mother discovered her own path towards accepting and, yes, loving her gay son even more. I mean, just loving her son. Unfortunately, empowered with this new acceptance of who her son was, she did finally tell my father, and his reaction was completely different. He only asked me one question: is it true? And when I answered yes, he slapped me across my face, hard, which, for my dad, that was very significant, as he believed it to be disrespectful to slap a child across the face. And even more so when that child, a son, was 16 years old, which he considered to be an adult man. When that first slap didn't get the repentance and retraction he wanted, he did it again, even harder. I didn't cry. Probably more out of shock, if I'm going to be perfectly honest. But that second slap made me angry. When I still remained silent and didn't cry and didn't retract or didn't show any type of repentance, he attempted to slap me again. And without thinking, I stopped his hand and looked at him straight in the eyes. And I said, "Dad, that's enough." I then walked away. Several years later, I had already moved out of the family home when I was 18, so 2 years later after that, my mother passed away when I was 21. And without her influence to help guide my father to acceptance, my relationship with him floundered. I made several attempts to try and help my father understand who his son was. But he never could get past the gay issue. To kind of give you an example, when I graduated from college for the second time with my BA in marketing and communications, my father's response was, "Well, what the F are you going to do with your life now?" It was during this conversation that I found out that my father believed that it was due to my going to college to get an education that caused me to be gay. And you ever have one of those moments where something flies out of your mouth. I'm gay, and of course, this beauty. Oh, Dad. I was gay way before college.
He didn't particularly appreciate that.
On June 27th, 2015, I married my partner of 18 years, Joel Frederick. The date carried great significance, as it just happened to fall the day after the Supreme Court of the United States ruled in support of same-sex marriage. After we had planned for over a year for this wedding, because we both really wanted a traditional wedding at our church, I gotta tell you, if there was a single sign that this was meant to be, and that God was shining down on myself and Joel and our family and friends, it would be that our wedding day took place on the 27th, surrounded by 180 friends and family members. My father, who had said he would attend and walk my mother's sister, my Aunt Mary Ann, down the aisle, who she was standing in for my late mother. Mary Ann and I were very close. He decided 2 weeks before the wedding that he didn't want any part of it. And my father managed to break my aunt's heart with his actions. She was a lovely person. She was only 11 years older than I was, so she was more like a big sister. And she had looked forward to seeing my father and hoped they could both take this happy occasion to work through the issues they had with each other. My father's attitude towards me being one of them. I will never forget her voice on the phone, how hurt she was when I had to break the news to her. It broke something inside me. I don't know if it was that one thin, fragile line of hope that connected my father to me, that one day he would suddenly realize that all he was losing by cutting his son out of his life and come to terms with his gay son. I physically felt something break inside my heart. Or maybe it had always been broken. Perhaps it might have been that last connection to that 16-year-old boy that stopped his father from slapping him a third time and told him, enough. That moment when I was on the phone with my father as he was putting the nail in the coffin of our relationship was the moment I realized everyone goes through this with their parents. I'm not talking about the death of a relationship between a father and a son or a father and a daughter or... I'm talking about the moment roles are switched and the child assumes the adult role. All aspects of childhood during that moment fell away and became the distant memories they truly were. And even though your heart is breaking, even though you want to scream, yell, tell your father what an ass he is, you don't.
There wouldn't be any point in doing so. Nothing to be gained.
In my response to my father's rejection of me and also to attend my wedding was just 7 words. It's okay, Dad. You don't have to come. My aunt died the following year, just about a year to the day of my wedding. And I haven't spoken to my father since. As a gay man, I have learned the hard way that putting my expectations and how I believe a person should act or believe is just setting myself up for disappointment. My father is a perfect example of this. Let me leave little doubt on one fact. I love my dad. Even with all of his faults, I love him. But that doesn't mean it's a good thing for him to be part of my life. And tragically, it really is that simple. And I pray for him every day. Not for him to accept me, because I just checked and that train has left the station. But for him to be healthy and happy. But despite everything, it was a wonderful day. And I think I did end up with my fairy tale ending. Different, yes, but still happy. Oh, I almost forgot the second coming out that happened at my high school. This had taken place several weeks after the incident with my father. I was on my way upstairs to my marine biology class when I encountered a group of football jocks on their way down to the first floor. I won't use their real names, but we'll refer to them in two parts, one being the leader, Jay, and the other jocks within his group as being the group. This is how that went. Jay. Hey, faggot. The group, laughing. It's faggot! Hey, faggot! Side note, they really weren't very inventive with their taunts. Not the sharpest sticks in the box. Jay. I'm talking to you, faggot. You gonna run and hide? Gonna look down and avoid us? Think you can go around with your faggoty ass and not expect someone to hit you for being a faggot? Or maybe you're just trying to look at my junk. At this point, he grabbed his crotch, and I did as I always did. I ignored the group and made my way further up the stairs. The group. Different variations of the same. I've got something for you to swallow, faggot. I honestly don't know what made me do it. Maybe it was my father slapping me and me standing up to him. Maybe it was the message my grandmother had for my mother to help her through her journey of acceptance. Maybe I was just done with it all. Sick and tired of the abuse. Or maybe, and this could be a long shot, so stick with me, I had a secret. A secret that could possibly get me beat up, but would probably feel really good to let fly. To this day, I never found out if the person in question really knew about it before I told them. Me, turning back to them. You know what, boys? You're right. Jay. That's right, we're right, faggot. Me. Jay, please don't strain yourself with responses. I am a faggot. I like guys. Although I prefer gay. Jay. You'll always be faggot to me. Me, taking a deep breath. Okay, Jay. We can do it your way. Let me ask you something. Do you call your older brother faggot? The entire group went silent. You do know I've been dating your older brother, now going on a few months. I hope we didn't make too much noise the other night when your brother snuck me into his bedroom and when we fooled around a little bit. I was really concerned we would disturb you, since your bedroom was right next to his. We thought about going to the pool house, but that is really close to your parents' bedroom. And, well, that would have been really embarrassing if they had caught us. But I have to tell you, Jay, if your talent, and at that moment my eyes did wander down to his crotch, is half as great as your brother's, well, you're more of a man than I ever thought you could be. Okay, let me take a step back. You ever hear a person reference when relating a story that the color from the face of another person just drained away? Well, that's what happened to poor Jay. With a face that went white and then deep red with embarrassment, Jay stood there with his mouth open, unsure what to do. As for me, I took the opportunity of Jay's inability to process what had just taken place and turned, walking up the remaining steps, and quickly made it to the boys' restroom before I offered up my tuna sandwich, apple, and chips to the porcelain gods. I literally was that scared about what I had just done. After that, I was never bothered again. I could flatter myself and say that my confidence and strength of standing up to my tormentors did the trick of stopping the abuse. But I think it was more along the lines of the other jocks wondering if Jay's brother was the only brother I could be fooling around with. Now that's what I call a fairy tale ending. Thanks for listening.